Oh, a great fast blast in from Paul in Socorro, New Mexico. He says, George, I live here in Socorro. Lonnie Zamora is still alive and well-liked. He remains a little reticent about talking, but he's here. Well, we'll work on him. Maybe we'll get him on the program. We'll be back with your phone calls in Art Campbell next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Art Campbell will take your phone calls this hour. Did you ever have a chance to look at some of the work of Billy Meyer, the person in Switzerland who has taken this series of incredible UFO pictures, Art?
Yes, I have, and I think they are incredible.
Truly.
And I saw a video of him showing him. He has a left arm gone at the elbow, if I recall, and he explained why, as a photography teacher, I was very interested in his explanation of how he took the pictures and what kind of camera he used. And he used the standard camera that you could wind with a thumb wind, with one hand, and showed how he held it up to, and took pictures with it. I think they're absolutely incredible. I don't know I can go along with all the guru stuff that goes along with this kind of thing, but I think his pictures are great.
I got to tell you, Art, we just had an earlier report on before you came on with Dr. Michael Sala, who says that a French aviator has told him of a meeting that was held in February at the United Nations about the possibility of disclosure that could happen around 2009. Do you actually think governments are going to tell us the truth?
Well, remember what early on I told you that 2 or 3% of the people when I first started talking about UFOs in 59 didn't believe, would believe that they're true. Now 65% or 70%. Another generation will all believe it. Well, we won't be here, some of us. But I think it's gradually kind of coming out like water under a door. And I don't think they can stop it. I'm not looking for a big announcement. I think it would upset too many people, too many apple carts, or religion, economic. I think we probably will find out. Probably some bureaucrat somewhere will announce it that they've got nothing to lose. Somebody retiring or something.
Or someone who wants to win.
yeah, something like that. I have heard this for years. Wait till we get on the moon. Wait till this. Wait till that. They'll announce it. I have a feeling that it's going to be a lot of trauma when they announce it. And I don't think anybody wants to go through that, particularly a politician.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's pick it up by going to our East of the Rockies line. John, you're on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
Yeah, Atlanta.
Okay, John, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Campbell, about 8 or 10 years ago, my daughter and I spent the night in Socorro. We drove down. I was lost as heck, and I came upon a little place called Horse Springs and a mountain there called Jack Mountain. And a lady sent me up to this lady's home, a little lady in a little teeny Mexican house, said, go up to the cattle guard, take a left. I went up there about a half a mile, and this little house sitting right on the plains of San Augustine. And in a minute, here comes a woman with her children, a real nice lady. She lived there. She told me, she said, you know, people come here every once in a while. So we had a Japanese film crew here on the plains a few months ago. I don't know what they were doing. So she told me to go on down and look around. My daughter and I did, and she was had a bunch of horses. But make a long story short, many years ago, I heard about a guy named Gerald Anderson, and I wondered if you had ever heard of him. He claimed he saw the same one you're talking about there at the plains near the big array, and they were hunting for moss agates, he and his father and his uncle. And he went up to this thing, and he said it was real cold, and it smelled like acetone, fingernail polish remover. And there were bodies lying there and all this and that. And his uncle tried to talk to him, and the army came and chased them off. Have you ever heard the story about this from Gerald Anderson?
Yes, I have. I have read quite a bit of his material that was being passed around in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm very familiar with the story.
Well, I talked to his wife one day. She lives over now around Springfield, Missouri. She said that he had a habit of making up a lot of stories. So I don't know how true it was, but when he saw it first, he said he thought it was a blimp. Now, about that time, the Navy over around China Lake was messing around with that kind of stuff. I've often wondered if it could have been something that they were doing and it floated or it got over to the plains of Santa Augustine and crashed. Well, he said it looked like a blimp.
Well, if I recall, Gerald was 5 going on 6.
Yeah.
And a person at that age would be very impressionable, anything that was gray, shiny.
Yeah.
And they know blimps is gray and shiny.
Okay.
I never thought much about a blimp, but it very well could have been. The lady you mentioned is Amy Farr Williams, and that was her, one of her children, Heather, and I believe Ralph was is the boy.
I believe so. They live in sort of like a concrete block house there, right on the cliff there.
Yeah, that's the old L.B. Moore place.
Yeah.
Yes.
She was
familiar with it.
She was real nice to my daughter and I. She let us roll around.
She's the one that gave me the wafer with a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Well, listen, thanks for talking to me. Thank you, George.
Okay, you're very welcome. Because you're
nice talking to you, too, sir.
Handful of knowledge. Handful of knowledge, Art Campbell. No doubt about that. Do you go on any speaking tours or anything like that?
I'd like to. I don't speak as much as I like to, so if anybody out there has a conference coming up, I'd be amenable to speaking at a conference. I've been invited to the Ozark Conference in April 11th to 13th, and I think Linda Howell is going to be there on Tim Good, a whole lot of people, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, you'll be one of the heavy hitters there yourself.
Well, I don't know about heavy hitters, but I'm 75, and I've got a pretty good swing left.
West of the Rockies. Hi, Helen. You're on the air with us.
Yes, I've been meaning to call you for ages since this has happened to us. We're RVers in our spare time, and in our tours in the Southwest, we came across the museum in Roswell on the main drag. And we went through the museum slowly and meticulously, mm-hmm. reading all the articles. And at the end of it, you sign your name in if you were there and visiting. And the gentleman who owned the museum struck up a conversation, asked had we had any encounters of any kind ourselves, and why had we been so fascinated with it all. I told him as a child, I was 10, when the Roswell incident happened and had read the paper thoroughly, and great conversation in the household about we are now visited by aliens. Well, he went on to tell me the story that the reason that he had spent this money, his own personal money, for this museum in Roswell was to tell people about a person that he had been engaged to when the Roswell incident had occurred. She was a nurse, and she was called by the investigators, the military apparently, or the local investigators there, to the site where they had four little small bodies that would fit into coffins, childlike coffins. He, at that time, was engaged to this nurse. She was participating in the autopsies on three of the bodies. Very upset. She was. He was working at a mortician's mortuary,
mm-hmm.
and he was called to bring four children's coffins to the site, which he did. And she came out in a very agitated situation and said that she would meet him the next day at their usual rendezvous, a little ice cream parlor of some type in Roswell. Well, she did. And she was told him that she had been sworn to secrecy, but she was so upset, nervous, agitated, looking around and crying at times with him, and told him that one of them was still alive, but three had died. And but she wasn't supposed to talk about it. She was just all agitated, telling everyone. Well, they were engaged to be married. He said that was the last time he ever saw his fiancée. Ever. And he had taken his life savings, of course, had married someone else, but he had taken his life savings and built that museum that's there and had gathered everything that he could in regards to the Roswell incident, papers from everywhere, and articles written by persons of importance in regard to it, and had films there. But it was most interesting because he said, I'm at the end of my life, he said, but this has to be known to people. He said, I never saw her again, he said, but I've never forgotten her. And he said, I tell everybody who comes through in regard to his fiance from his high school days.
That would have been Glenn Dennis and his fiance. He said her name was Naomi Self. And that story is well known in UFO lore.
Right. Well, I just wanted to everyone who didn't have the opportunity to go through that wonderful museum to hear the story that he had told us, because I know I read the paper thoroughly, and it was discussed in our household about this, the jewel-like red jewels on the dashboard of the craft. That's what how it was described in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And I thought it was most interesting, wanted to cut it out and take it to our news articles at school when they had it so we would have a discussion. But it happened, of course, in the summer, and right. We didn't do that because then it was debunked and it was an old poo-poo, and who would believe such a thing happened?
Well, you know, when the government gets in and says this couldn't be true, and we know something is there, if the government says it can't be, somehow we don't have that much confidence in our government anymore. But that is a well-known story, and you've told it very well. And most of us who've been around UFOs have heard parts of that story. She disappeared about 2 weeks after the crash. And he searched for her for years, and UFO researchers searched for her for years. And she, one man even contacted the head nurse of the Air Force nurses, and they were unable to locate her.
All right, thank you. Let's go next to our wild card line. Hey, Joe, you're on Coast to Coast.
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing tonight?
Great.
It's fine.
I have a UFO story from when I was 8 years old. We just moved into a new house. I live here in Ohio. For five nights straight at about 10 o'clock at night, I'd look out my window and I'd see what looked like the full moon. I'm not big on, you know, astronomy and astrology and stuff like that, but I know the moon doesn't stay full for five nights straight, and it doesn't move from north to south like this object that I saw in the sky was. It was about half the size of a full moon, and it kept every night about 10 o'clock, it moved over my house into my parents' woods, and it disappeared. I don't know if you guys have any information on something like that or what.
Well, the we get a lot of the light anomalies are one of the most common UFOs seen, and they're truly unidentified because, and you know, you can't seeing a silvery craft against the blue sky is pretty unmistakable, but lights can really fool you, and you just have to keep looking and keep working on those things. I don't know what else to tell you, but.
Did you ever see a UFO, Art?
No.
Me either.
Yeah, I haven't seen one. I'm looking forward to it. But
would you go on a trip if they came down and got you?
Listen, I've got a scenario worked out, George, and you'd be one of the first we'd visit. And as some of these skeptics, I'd get up there with a bullhorn and say, hey, buddy, come out here. I want to show you something. I'd be up in a UFO and... but, you know, it's just an old man's fantasy now.
I'd go. Just make sure they bring me back.
Yeah. Well, I understand they're not abducting anybody over 37.
Well,
so I think we're both safe.
We're safe. I'm safe by some time. How old are you again? International line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Drob. I'm calling from Saskatchewan, Canada.
Yes, sir.
I have a comment about yesterday's show.
Okay.
And a question for your present guest.
Sure. Let's take the question first. Go ahead.
The question is, I can't believe that with such an artifact that nobody's taking you serious. No scientists have taking, this is almost like something from the film Terminator, where they got a piece of technology sort of stashed away in there, and they get some kind of further advancement in technology from it, and that you've got this artifact, and there doesn't seem to be anything happening with it.
Well, I would imagine that there's probably a shelf of these artifacts somewhere in the government archives. I think probably I have the only civilian one, and I'm the only one that's talking about it. But I imagine that if they had found that the little grays were android clones and they found artificial organs, I imagine they've got a shelf of these things somewhere. But mine just happened to have been lost in the dust and dirt of a crash and eroded out later. Archaeologists came down there and found spear points laying on the ground after the wind had blown away the sand and so forth. That's kind of what happened with my artifacts. So, yes, they are unusual, and when I speak, I usually take them with me and show people. So I have them to show also.
Okay, very quickly, your thoughts about Dr. John Lermer from last night?
Well, you had two guests on last night, and I wanted to address the thing about the alien abduction.
Mm-hmm.
It's always presented how there could be evil or bad aliens.
Yes.
And I remember something that a friend told me about, a book called The Pleiadians. You might have heard of that.
Sure have, yeah.
To travel across the expanses of the universe, you have to know the laws of the universe, which means basically you have to have God's operating manual. And when you're that highly intelligent, you become devoid of emotion. So these aliens that we perceive or hear about, perceived as doing bad things to us, well, they're not going to feel bad about shoving a needle in your eye and examining you because they don't have any emotion. They're not dangerous. They're not evil. They're just dangerous because they don't have any emotion.
That's not a bad point, Art. They do not have any emotion. No, I don't think they've ever been described as having emotion.
You can't be an evil person and know the laws of the universe and travel across it. It just doesn't work.
Well, I've heard that. I think I recall reading quite a bit of Linda Moulton Howe's work and some of her early High Strangeness books. And that's pointed out that they come down and abduct people. I'm not into this, but this is what I hear. And they want us to hold some of the babies because they don't have the emotional stability to know what to do to nurture a child. Now that would be a problem if you're having children of any kind, not being able to know what to do to nurture them. And apparently some of the abductions that we have been specifically for women to hold children. And they, of course, they just might be yours or whatever, but the fact that the clones wouldn't have emotions is interesting. Now, I don't know whether they're actual biological beings or clones.
All right. We'll be back with final phone calls with Art Campbell in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, a couple of guests as we talk about predictions and world events. I'm looking forward to that on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Art Campbell, our very special guest tonight. Art, I'm enjoying this conversation with you.
Me too. I really had a good time myself.
Knowledgeable guy you are, my friend. Let's go back to the final calls. First time caller line. Mike, where are you calling from?
Lima, Ohio.
Okay, welcome to the show.
Yeah, great. It's good to be on it.
Sure.
I've been waiting a long time. I'm the president of the Lima Area UFO Research Association.
Ah, very good. Okay.
And last October 31st, I filmed a UFO broad daylight for 8 minutes.
What did you think it was?
Well, I don't know what it was, but I'm 61 years old, and the last 2 years, I've seen things like just incredible around Lima here, and quite a few people have been seeing things around Lima.
Do you have a military base that way?
Yeah, well, they make the Army tank plants here in Lima.
Okay.
And there's a big oil refinery here in Lima.
Ah, but they don't make UFOs.
They don't make them, huh?
What about a drone? What do you think? Could it have been a drone, something we have?
I don't know. It just looked like a big plate sitting up. When I first saw it, it just looked like a star up in the sky, but I know, you know, it couldn't have been a star because it was below the clouds. And so I grabbed my camera, you know, because I've been seeing stuff so much. In 2006, I filmed them 6 times. But they was always moving, you know, and I'd only get them for, you know, like 30 seconds to a minute. And this one just sit there. I mean, it never moved. 8 minutes, and I found it, and I finally just had to quit filming and go start my work for the day.
Got to send us some of this video, Mike, can you?
Yes, I just need an address.
George@coasttocoastam.com. Just like the website, but just add my name to it.
Okay.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, look forward to getting it. Do you still go out on some cases, Art?
Not really. I'm getting on in years. I'm 75, born in 32.
You're a kid, Art.
So, oh yeah, I'm a kid. I've got a lot of energy, but I went out on a couple of MUFON cases. I'm about 5 hours from probably the nearest MUFON investigator. And I got called and asked to go out and check out a couple of cases several years ago. But I'm pretty well, my time pretty well taken up with this project.
Hey, you know what? I should ask you now how you get this book, UFO Crash, at San Augustine.
Well, it's on the site. The guys get on the website.
There's a direct link.
Link to the book. We also have a CD that's for sale. And they get the information on www.ufocrashbook.com, and it tells you where to order there, PayPal, and the whole thing.
I want to know more about that artifact that you have, that biological thing. I mean, that's incredible.
It is, and I would like to have some more people look at it, and I've had everybody look at it that I could possibly think of.
Everybody's baffled?
Yes, they are. I sent pictures of it to Denton Cooley, and Cooley invented the first human heart in 1969.
All right. What did he say?
He said it was probably the strangest thing he'd ever seen, and I asked him if he wanted me to bring it by the next time I was down in Houston. He said no.
He didn't want anything to do with it, huh?
I didn't mention UFOs, but I think that would have come up eventually.
Sounds like a guy I was at a conference one
yeah,
day.
Yeah, right, yeah.
He comes up to me and he says, look, you got to promise you won't tell anybody this. And I went, tell him what? And he said, please, just promise what I'm about to tell you and show you stays with us. And that'll tell you what kind of secret I can keep now, right? And I said, yeah, okay, sure. And he says, I've invented a perpetual motion machine. It goes on forever. And I said, you're kidding me. Have you marketed this? He says, no. But I made it, and he said, I want to show you a picture of it. I promise you won't tell anybody about it. And I went, well, no, I won't. So he pulls out his pictures, his Polaroid pictures of this device, and I look at it, and I went, what is this? He says, well, this is my perpetual motion machine. And I said, this thing is made with toilet bowl parts. And he said, yeah, I wish I could get it to work. That happens. But in your case, what you come across are very strange, real things. And that's what's so fascinating.
Well, I'm just one of these people that I don't know whether I'm lucky or unlucky, but I'm persistent. And it generally pays off. It gets me in difficulty sometimes. But in this case, just going back there to look at that site, just cold. I was in a mayor of a small town and kind of had need to get away from the city council and a few other people. I told her, I'm going back to Mexico. And I was there 4 or 5 days, and I found this thing sitting under the sagebrush on the top of the ground. And I knew that it was not from this earth.
All right, next up, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, where are you calling from?
Reno, Nevada.
Ah, okay, good. Go ahead.
I just had a question. George, I'm just kind of a speculatism sort of gentleman.
Okay.
I just have a question for you. I'm not exactly convinced that UFOs or extraterrestrials actually exist.
Well, so there's some people who do not who believe that too.
Well, it's not that I don't necessarily believe it. It's that I sort of have a little bit of a speculation, but I it's kind of like I want to believe. You understand?
Yeah. Well, we all do.
Well, I need a little bit of, let's say, well, it's not necessarily evidence, but I want a little bit of a...
coaxing. You need a little bit more.
Well, the book that I recommend to people, two of them, that they want some evidence, and this is before any fall to all of any problems or anything like that. It's just two pure books Stanton Friedman's crash at Corona, and the Burleson Moore Roswell incident. And that pretty well tells you what they found, and that's before we had a lot of political infighting and what have you and so forth. But those are two books I recommend for anybody who wants to reform themselves.
What do you think about government whistleblowers, Art? Where are they all?
I've met a few, and they're a pretty cautious breed. As a matter of fact, I'm working with a guy who was an airman at Holloman Air Force Base, and I wrote you about the material. And he said that Eisenhower landed there in 1955 and went aboard a UFO. And I found three witnesses that they saw Ike there. He was supposed to be in Georgia hunting.
And he apparently went aboard a parked UFO near his plane.
Right.
That's an incredible story. I want pictures of this stuff. Somebody's got to have them somewhere.
Well, I'm sure they're official photographers, but I don't think we're going to be seeing them in our lifetime.
Let's go to our wild card line. Hello there. You're on the air with us.
Yes. Hello, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you. I wanted to share a story with you and your guest. When I was younger, I was with an ex-girlfriend who had called me on her way to my home. And she was with her sister and her sister's boyfriend, and they were telling me about some activity they seen in the sky. And at that point, I was a skeptic as well, and I didn't believe it. Well, when they actually came to my house, my girlfriend and I took a ride down to the beach. I live on Cape Cod. And I was sitting at the beach while I was sitting there. Sure enough, these lights in the sky standing still, then one would dip across and then stop, and then the next, and I know I work in the intelligence arena for the government, former military, that there's really not too many things that can move that fast without making any sound. Well, after watching this activity for quite some time, I decided I was going to flash my headlights, and she kind of got a little nervous. At any rate, during this activity, all of a sudden, I can hear an airplane, and, you know, you can hear an airplane, they're way up there, and before you know it, you see this airplane coming into to view. While this was taking place, whatever they may have been, they started mimicking the airplane and moving at the same pace. Well, once the airplane was out of sight, they started dancing around the sky again. Anyway, I started flashing my lights. I thought it was, you know, what are they going to come down and abduct me? Again, being a skeptic, at that point, this craft came out of nowhere along from say east to west along the beach over our head. And it was huge. Now, I never seen anything like this. And until that day, it changed my mind. But, again, there's nothing that can move that fast and stop that short without making any noise. And they weren't very far. And then when this, object did go over us, I think I have a new agreement that these things do actually exist. And again, this was some time ago, so I have been fortunate enough to see that. I heard you gentlemen say earlier that you haven't, but what an amazing spectacle.
So that changed you somewhat.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you, sir, that, you know what, I honestly believe, I was talking with my wife about this the other day, that, you know, why are we so superior, you know? Who's to say that we're so old school, if you will, versus what's out there? And if I might add, sir, I heard you talk on a number of your shows about the number 111. That's my birthday, and that's also my dad's birthday. I was wondering if any significance to that.
I love it. Well, you're an enlightened one, that's for sure.
If you didn't know, 111 November 1st is All Saints Day, and my name is Angelo.
Thanks, well, gentlemen. Thanks. Thanks for your
much.
Okay, Angelo, have a good night.
Appreciate that. Carl Sagan, did you ever talk with him?
No, I saw many a TV special with him in it, but I never got to talk with him.
A believer in life out there, but didn't believe it came here.
Well, I think that was the public consumption. I heard that he was a different man privately.
Really?
And, I think that he probably was talking the government line, because most of the people in his profession talk it. But I have a feeling that anybody who could write a story like Contact must have a little more information than just guessing. But I think what he said publicly wasn't exactly what he would say privately.
Are you a believer, Art, that we've been seeded?
I think it's possible. I think it's possible, but I would tend to lean more towards evolution than I would be intervention. But I think it is possible, yes.
All right, back to the phones we go, east of the Rockies. Hello there, you're on the air with us. That would be you, Terry.
Terry?
Hi.
Okay. Hi, first-time caller, and I've just got a different take on UFOs altogether.
Okay.
Time travelers, and I thought it was us, mankind, traveling back in time to amend mistakes and not UFOs.
Well, we've certainly got a lot of them to amend, I'll tell you that. Maybe.
Well, I mean, my take on it is the abductions. The abductions you don't seem to hear about the abductions now, but you did in the 50s and 60s. And just a thought was they weren't checking out humans or mankind. They were genetically changing individuals to amend offspring, the future. And third point, I kind of outlined a few things so I wouldn't sound silly on the phone because I've never called in before. Reason for different shapes is advanced technology. You know, I'm 55, so an array of different shapes have popped up in different places, and I'm just thinking it's their ships, us in the future. We make changes in ships so they can travel better.
Well, and those pictures that Damsky took in the 50s are they published kind of look like Model Ts compared to the sleek things we see now, like that one that they were selling a while back from Area 51. I think Bob Lazar was selling a kit or something for a while back, but they certainly have had an evolution of shape.
Maybe they're coming from different planetary systems, aren't?
That very well could be. I suspect that we, from what I've been able to ascertain, at least four or five that are actively flying around Earth for various reasons.
Next,
four or five different entities.
Next up, first time caller line. Hi there, you're on Coast to Coast.
Yes, sir. This is Brandon from Austin, Texas.
Hey, one of my favorite cities.
How are the freedom fighters against the New World Order, my friend?
Yep.
I got two UFO stories to make it quick. I know you're running out of time. First time I saw a UFO was in 1995 in Lockhart, Texas, which is about 20 minutes south of Austin. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, and my mom's diabetic. I was 10 years old at the time, and she's diabetic. She got a police scanner, so she would listen to the police scanner while she's checking her blood sugar. Well, someone called in and said, there's a UFO on Commerce Street, which is about four or five blocks down from my house. So my mom goes, Brandon, you got to wake up. You got to see this. So we go outside. Sure enough, there's an eight-sided craft, like a skinnier stop sign. And it was about, I guess, 50 to 75 feet in the air. It's like about the same height as where the courthouse, an old small-town courthouse would be.
Yeah.
But it was just chilling in the sky, and it had a light in the center that went around like bloop. Bloop, bloop, like all around, and it just hovered there. And it was like in January, man. It was colder than all get out there, and I freaked out, man. I was only 10 years old, so I ran in the house after. You know, I didn't watch it leave because I was too scared. But to the guy who's a skeptic, man, until you see one, you will S your pants, man. I swear. Second story, my mom saw when she was a little girl in Alabama. My grandpa was in the military, and she was riding down the highway. And she said she had saw a craft. And she's like, Daddy, Daddy, look, there's something following us. There's something following us. And he wouldn't acknowledge it. And the next morning, the neighbor's yard was completely charred. And all the government guys out there, military dudes out there, with Geiger counters. And, of course, what did they say it was? It's a weather balloon.
Of course. That's always the excuse, right?
Yeah, there's something weird going on, man. It makes me think that there's not little green men flying in these things, but it's somebody else.
What do you think? If it's something else, what might it be, Art? What are the other possibilities?
Well, we used to use one in NICAP investigation. There was a lot of things were misinterpretation of known objects, and I suspect nowadays we're looking at probably less than 15% are going to be genuine UFOs, and other things are misinterpretations. And I certainly don't question the gentleman just called, but there's a lot of things up there that could be probably could be explained if we were trained observers and knew what we were looking at.
Possibly. Well, we're out of time, Mr. Campbell. I want to thank you. The work, UFO Crash, wonderful. We'll link up your website for the next day or two as well.
Yeah, and I'm looking for a publisher, and I'll entertain offers. So
they'll all rush to your door, my friend. Thanks for the work.
Thank you.
Okay. Art Campbell, wonderful guy. Great history of UFO history, indeed. Well, that wraps it up for Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.